I think we're just about ready. Our third case for this morning is International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 2150, against NextEra. Ms. Hartley.
May it please the Court. Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. Excuse me.
You can get a glass of water if
I'm
you
okay.
Can.
I'm all right. Thank you. I appreciate that. Jill Hartley here from the Prebient Law Firm representing International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 2150, on appeal of the union's petition to compel arbitration of a grievance that was filed on behalf of one of its members who was an employee of the Appley NextEra Energy at the Point Beach nuclear facility owned by the company. The union filed the grievance following the employee, whose name is Jonathan Hofstra, following Mr. Hofstra's discharge from employment at the nuclear facility after the company revoked his unescorted access. Unescorted access is a term for essentially a security clearance that, pursuant to nuclear regulations, all employees who work at a nuclear facility must have. And the company terminated or revoked his unescorted access after he self-reported to the company that he had been arrested for OWI in his personal vehicle.
This was an Article 12 grievance that the union filed?
That's correct. The union filed the grievance citing Article 12. They also cited Article 7 of the collective bargaining agreement, which is actually a non-discrimination provision, which has never really been discussed or been in dispute. It was pursuant to Article 12 of the contract, which is the discipline and discharge provisions of the agreement, and which require just cause for discharge.
So if I can summarize what at least I understand your argument to be, it's that Article 12 has a just cause provision for disciplinary layoffs or discharges. Article 16 is the part of the collective bargaining agreement where in step 4 the arbitration is there. You don't see an exclusion in Article 12 or for that matter Article 16 for unescorted access denials, ergo arbitrable.
Right. That's correct.
And the district court went along part of that way with you.
Yes. The district court did. The district court recognized the longstanding presumption of arbitrability in the case of an arbitration clause, and I don't think there's any real dispute about that. Where the district court decided that the union's grievance was not arbitrable, the district court also found there was no specific exclusion, but then went to the next kind of step in the analysis of looking at other forceful evidence of an intent by the parties to exclude a grievance from arbitration or a matter from arbitration.
So what does forceful evidence mean?
Well, you know, that's a good question, and I honestly have looked at a lot of cases on this issue and haven't come up with any real substantive definition of forceful evidence. I kind of look back at the requirements in the law that in order to exclude a grievance from arbitration or a matter from arbitration, that there has to be explicit language. And I think that in the cases clearly say that it's either an explicit exclusion or other forceful evidence. And to me, that means we need something very strong and something explicit. And I don't believe that the court...
At least you didn't come in with a dictionary definition of it.
I did not.
She's prepared well for her oral argument.
Thank you. I believe that there is no evidence here or other forceful evidence that the lower court was wrong in relying on what it did. It looked at two things. First, there was the SunTrump arbitration award. So in 2006, these parties had an arbitration under a different collective bargaining agreement. There are, I believe, 4 collective bargaining agreements between Local 2150 and NextEra.
They appear to be color-coded, right? White, green, and blue,
exactly.
I don't know what the
and
other
white. White is the contract that controlled Mr. Hofstra's employment. The arbitration award was issued under the blue book. So we've throughout the record, you'll see references to the white and the blue book.
What happens when you run out of primary colors? Is there going to be a puce book?
Yes, exactly.
An olive drab book?
We haven't gotten there yet, but that's where we'll go if that happens. So under the blue book, the parties arbitrated the issue of a very similar issue. The underlying facts obviously were different. But it was an individual whose unescorted access was revoked by the company, and as a result, because that is a condition of employment, the employee was automatically discharged. And at the arbitration, or very shortly before, the company raised the issue of arbitrability. Now, this was NextEra's predecessor, but nonetheless, it's the same parties.
So what should the union, I mean, one assumes the union wasn't happy with the outcome of the SunTrip arbitration. But it would have almost certainly been a non-starter for the union to have gone to a federal court and said, refuse to recognize the arbitral award, because that's just not almost ever a successful strategy. It almost would have been frivolous.
Right.
And I suppose if the union was really convinced that this was the wrong interpretation, it might have even perceived risks in trying to address it in contractual language.
Well, and that's the position that the lower court took, that by not addressing this arbitration award in negotiations, subsequent negotiations, in the white book, even though the arbitration award was issued under the blue book, that the union had this demonstrated other forceful evidence pursuant to the case law that the party's intent was that the issue of site access decisions, which ultimately result in an employee's termination, were not subject to arbitration. And from the union's perspective, I think as a practical matter, and I think this is where you're, at least I'm going to interpret your question going, I guess we look at it from the standpoint of if the union had gone to the company during the next negotiations and said we'd like to include language in the contract that now makes these discharges after site access denials arbitrable, and we'd like to put a specific inclusion into the contract, presumably we'd be in the same position where we are now, where the company would be saying, well, because presumably they would reject that proposal. And they would be in the position now of saying, well, you're trying to get something through arbitration that you couldn't in negotiations, which arbitrators regularly disapprove of and deny mm-hmm. grievances on that basis. Mm-hmm. So the union really was in a position...
Well, at least rationally could have. I mean, I guess you don't have forceful evidence if the evidence that you have could equally support two different conclusions. I mean, unless it points strongly in one direction.
Right, right. And the forceful evidence here that the court found, it doesn't meet the standard as far as the union is concerned. There was the issue of not making a proposal during negotiations to address that SunTrip award. And then there was also the issue of the removal of certain language from the party's collective bargaining agreement. And this was language that was in the white book, the one that controlled Mr. Hofstra's employment. It was in Article 12, which is the discipline discharge provision, and it was
So I have a question for you about that. The language that went out said, decisions regarding unescorted access authorization that adversely affect employment of employees will not be arbitrary or capricious. So with that language out, you still have Article 12 saying, nonetheless, you can't discharge any employee without good cause. So do you understand there to be some difference between the just cause and arbitrary and capricious? Are those two different ways of saying the same thing? Or?
Actually, I would say that an arbitrary and capricious standard is a lower standard than the just cause standard, that the just cause standard gives the arbitrator the authority to review the underlying reason for the discharge, in this case the site access removal, and come up with a remedy if he or she finds appropriate if there is no just cause, and that it's a different standard, I believe, than arbitrary and capricious.
So you think the union could have agreed to delete that and bring the white book into conformity with whatever other color we're dealing with, green. And without at the same time implicitly be writing an exception into Article 12?
Yes. Yes. I believe that the just cause standard still applies to this case and the grievance that was filed on Mr. Hofstra's behalf. He was discharged. The company has to have a just cause for his discharge, and included within just cause has to include review of all the underlying reasons for the discharge. In this case, it happened to be site access removal denial. And the fact that site access denial or there's no specific provision in the collective bargaining agreement that subjects site access decisions or the resulting terminations that may happen if it's removed to arbitration isn't the analysis, isn't the appropriate analysis. And it's not whether there's a specific inclusion, it's whether there's a specific exclusion.
Is there any list of things that require denial of site access?
Not in the collective bargaining agreement. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission regulations,
it has, my understanding,
it's spelled out in those, and the company makes decisions based on that. But it's the union's position that they can do that, but ultimately that decision, because the parties have negotiated a just cause provision in their contract, the union still has to be able to submit those decisions and that underlying decision resulting in termination to arbitration.
So the arbitrator would be the one who might say, well, the company acted entirely in accordance with the NRC regulations. I find just cause.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's the risk that you take anytime you take a case to arbitration. The arbitrator has control of just cause.
If the arbitrator said there is no just cause for the discharge, would that entitle the worker to re-enter the plant?
Yes. I don't think that you can separate the two.
Well, but that's part of the problem. Right? How would that entitle him to enter the plant? He would still remain somebody who is not authorized to be there.
Well, I think that when I say the issues are intertwined or you can't separate the two, the arbitrator would have to make a determination that the company did not have the right to remove that person's site access. That, in other words, that the decision denying the revoking or denying the person's site access was incorrect pursuant to the just cause provision, and that would have to be reinstated if the arbitrator found no just cause for discharge.
I don't see anything in the collective bargaining agreement authorizing the arbitrator to disagree with the NRC with a decision reached under the NRC's procedures.
You're right. There's nothing that addresses
it. Of course, the collective bargaining agreement says that arbitration is limited to issues under the collective bargaining agreement.
Absolutely.
And the application of the NRC's procedures is not one of those issues.
But this is a term.
That's what leads to my puzzle. It sounds like, in your view, an arbitrator could say there was no just cause, and the person still wouldn't get his job back because he couldn't pass the gates of the plant.
No, I'm not saying that, because I think it would be foolish of me to be advocating a position that simply gets you to the point of someone not being able to stand at the gates and not be able to walk in the door.
But that's the source of my problem. Since the access decision is something that appears to be extrinsic to the collective bargaining agreement, and the collective bargaining agreement says the arbitrator's authority is limited to the application of the agreement, why, in your view, would an arbitrator's decision under the agreement change the access decision?
Because the arbitrator has the ability to review the discharge for just cause.
Well, I thought even more under Exelon, the question, well, Exelon comments that the question had been contested for many years, but the NRC itself has taken the position that labor arbitrators have the power to look at access denial decisions. And we held in Exelon that the 2009 commission decision didn't change that policy. So the NRC itself has said, we think it's okay for labor arbitrators to do this.
Right.
If the collective bargaining agreement authorized that,
But I don't believe
Let me follow up on my question. Suppose the reason this employee couldn't go to work is that he had been convicted of felony drunk driving and put in prison. Could an arbitrator say, well, he shouldn't have been convicted, and therefore he has to be allowed to work, and the state has to let him out?
No. I certainly wouldn't agree that would be the case. I mean, I may like that result, but no, absolutely not.
Well, that goes beyond the contract, and that gets back to Judge Easterbrook's other point.
It's beyond the collective bargaining.
Things within the contract, but if the contract incorporates, as it does at one point, the access denial things. It has a comment about access denial for people who need to have certain kinds of mental testing.
Yes.
So the contract
reflects an awareness that this is one of the things that might be going on.
Right. And I guess I see this as no different than an arbitration over a discharge because someone has violated a company's policy on drugs and alcohol, which may not be part of a collective bargaining agreement. Maybe but they the, have an anti-discrimination harassment policy.
But the Atomic Energy Commission has acquiesced, though, in that particular area.
Yes. Yes, the ruling from the Exelon case is
well,
that
the NRC, has
arbitrators not, can review right. those decisions.
Has said the denial of access decisions
yes.
as well, precisely.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so you're about to run out of your time.
Yes,
so
I am.
Maybe just, but I'll give you a minute because
right.
we have
Thank
a lot of questions.
Much.
And we will hear from Mr. Miyoshi.
Thank you, Your Honor. Bill Miyoshi on behalf of the NextEra Energy Point Beach plant. Let me just pick up from where the conversation and the questioning left off, because I want to make sure that it's very clear what the district court did was apply a very careful textual analysis of the labor agreement, which complies with the instructions of the Seventh Circuit. I don't think there's a question about that.
But here's where I'm concerned about that. The court goes for a long way discussing what the labor agreement provides and gets to the point of saying all disputes are presumed arbitrable, no express provision in the White Book excludes or includes site access decisions. And then it's only when he gets to the point of saying, he says a reasonable readings Article 16 covers more than only discharges imposed after discipline. And then he turns to this extrinsic evidence. He doesn't actually say what Judge Easterbrook was speculating. He doesn't say that the topic isn't in the CBA or anything. He finds what he calls forceful evidence from two things. One, the Suntrup arbitration award, and two, the union's decision not to put this issue on the table when the agreement was renegotiated. For all I know, there may be other reasons, but the reasons he gave don't strike me as forceful evidence.
The contract only restricts the employer's ability to terminate employment.
But could you please address the... So are you going to agree with me then that the two reasons Judge Clavert gave are bad reasons for rejecting arbitration here?
No.
The Suntrip arbitration award, Well, let's take them one at a time then. Why does the result in Suntrup matter here or there about this? It's one arbitration. You are generally bound by what the arbitrator did, but because of that, because judicial review is so narrow, arbitrations don't normally have issue preclusive effects. The union could have seen itself as worse off. You could turn it around and say NextEra, when it renegotiated, could have made explicit what it clearly thinks is a good policy, namely no arbitration of access denial decisions. You have other things in the contract that say no arbitration of this sort of thing. There's one thing that goes up to step 3 and cuts off step 4. You could have thrown that into the contract, and then we wouldn't be here. But you would have probably had to pay a certain bargaining price for doing that.
Well, the argument there is the union could have, too.
Why should the union do that when its basic position is all things dealing with discharges are arbitrable if we can say it wasn't for good cause? They would undermine their position terribly across all 4 CBAs if they did that.
Let me answer the question. If you look at Article 8, and you look at Article 12, the only two restrictions, the only restriction on discipline or discharge, discharge, is when it is disciplinary.
Well, the district judge didn't read it that way, so I suppose you're taking issue. I just quoted you the language. He specifically says, I don't read Article 12 that way. I'm going to find it again for you since I closed my book. He says, a reasonable reading is that Article 16 covers more than only discharges imposed following or as a result of discipline. That's on page A11, which seems to be page 10 of his oral transcript. So you're certainly free to disagree with that if you want to, but that's what he finds.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you referenced Article 16 or Article 12.
He's talking about Article 16 scope of arbitration, and you can arbitrate for more than just the disciplinary things.
Yes.
And you don't think this man was in a disciplinary? Article 12 says discipline involving a layoff or discharge shall be for just cause.
If it's disciplinary related. If you read Article 8 and Article 12, the just cause standard applies only when there's discipline involved. Let me give you another example. If the circumstances were, and it's
Isn't
really
that
very analogous.
Is that a contract interpretation issue for the arbitrator?
No. Not according to the IAM versus Waukesha engine case. If the parties proscribed a certain subject and left it to the discretion of the company, and that's plain in your contract, then it's not subject to resolution by an arbitrator, particularly when the language in the arbitration provision in this contract is unusual, I believe unusually narrow, because it does not contain, like Exelon did, a catch-all provision which says any dispute concerning your working conditions would be subject to the jurisdiction of an arbitrator. This contract does not say that. It says an unresolved grievance and that is subject to, that involves the compliance with the terms and conditions of this agreement.
Well, so let me tell you my main worry with that line of argument. If you agree that the collective bargaining agreement authorizes an arbitrator to review a disciplinary discharge, right?
Yes.
So what, on your understanding, what prevents NextEra from calling every disciplinary discharge an access denial decision and thus gutting the arbitration clause?
Well, I think in that case you've got a fact issue. If the discipline can only be imposed.
You've got a fact issue.
No,
who
I'm,
would be deciding it? An arbitrator?
If the argument is the grievance in this case does not say that, but if the grievance were to accuse the employer, and NextEra in this case, of falsely cloaking a discharge reason for a disciplinary reason.
I don't know what it means to say falsely. The access decision is supposed to figure out who's trustworthy enough to be on the plane.
Correct.
And so suppose somebody at work punches a coworker, and the employer NextEra could say, well, you're being disciplined for punching this person. That's arbitrary. Or the employer might say, your willingness to punch somebody else shows you're not a fit person to be running a nuclear plant. That's an access decision. There's no pretense. It's just a different way of describing the same kind of thing. Your view, as I understand it, says the employer's choice of description, how it labels what's happening, is conclusive and cannot be reviewed by an arbitrator.
No, I didn't say that.
But
I said if the, I was going to the grievance.
That is the import of what you said,
yeah.
Because of course the follow-up question is, A, the employer could say we don't want people with a drinking problem working in a nuclear power plant, or B, they could say we're denying access because you've had your second OWI or because you weren't forthcoming with us about the first one or whatever way you want to characterize it. They're both reasons why you might be saying you're fired.
Well, then you're back to this, the fundamental question. You can subject, if there's an issue there as to whether the access was the real reason, the failure to be trustworthy and reliable, or the punching of the coworker, and the arbitrator has jurisdiction to determine whether who the aggressor was in that fight.
So
but the arbitrator under this contract...
I don't get it. On your argument, if the employer says this is an access denial because somebody who punches somebody else is not reliable enough to run a nuclear generation station, then there can't be arbitration. You won't have an arbitrator deciding whether A punched B or whether the punch was serious. It won't be arbitrated.
I'm not so sure, Judge Easterbrook. I'll
tell you why. As soon as you tell me that can be arbitrated, then I don't see why this grievance can't be arbitrated.
I'll tell you why. Because the arbitrator has no jurisdiction under this contract to review the access decision. And under this contract, And I think it's back to the question.
Then you have to answer my question about the punch by saying the arbitrator can't review it because NextGen, in my hypothetical, called that an access decision. And therefore, on your argument, is absolutely unreviewable.
No, let me answer it this way. There are two parts to that question.
You can't have this both ways.
Judge, there are two points to that question under your hypothetical. Because clearly someone who engages in violence at work is subject to discipline, no question. And in that question, that issue, that fact is subject to arbitration under this contract.
But isn't that also a reason for finding them untrustworthy and therefore denial of access?
That's my second part of my answer. I think that's correct. There is then a separate component that a person has displayed such egregious behavior that they are no longer trustworthy and reliable to work inside that plant.
Or the supervisor said so.
No, because the supervisor doesn't make that decision. A separate group, the security group within the plant, makes that decision.
Supervisor feeds it up to them, though. You don't have people roving around the plant looking for problems, I assume. There's a process.
There is a very intense process,
right.
But it is a completely separate group that is unrelated to line management over any individual employee.
How does this group of outsiders find out that there's been a problem on the plant floor?
It can come through a variety of ways. Self-reporting is in this case. B, behavioral observation, which requires all employees to report unusual behavior to security. That's, again, part of the NRC regulations to ensure safety in the plant and the health and welfare of the public. But the issue in this
The supervisor could tell the responsible people, or a coworker could, or the person could self-report.
And then security, a separate group investigates. They have an obligation under NRC regulations to any access program to investigate those circumstances.
This is a bit far afield, though, because the critical issue was how does the company characterize the problem to begin with? And you're saying one characterization takes you down the path where it's arbitrable under Article 16, and a different characterization takes you down a path where there's absolutely no arbitration.
But
Judge Easterbrook has been asking you to explain to us how that can be.
I think we've got the starting point confused. The starting point is the grievance itself. And the grievance...
No, I think the starting point is the event.
The event and the decision following.
Yeah, and the facts in this case are not in dispute. They did not
involve... I
didn't
say they were, but they could have said, I would be surprised if NextEra didn't have some policy about alcohol or drug abuse. It probably does wholly apart from NR. I mean, at least a lot of companies do. Maybe you don't, but a lot of companies have freestanding policies about that would presumably be arbitrable.
Yeah, I don't know what there's nothing in the record in this case about that, but my point is... The starting point of the issue is the grievance. And the union wrote the grievance to challenge the access decision, which concerned an issue that arose outside of the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no fact in this case that allows that would allow you to address this hypothetical, in my judgment, that and even if you could, I think you end up with a split decision. And there was a back and forth with Ms. Hartley on this point. Can you arbitrate the just cause or the discharge and also the access? And the answer I think she gave was correct, which is like, no, I can't. In this case, you can't separate
those
two.
Well, they're intertwined. That takes you back to Exelon, actually, since I think on this record, it's not as clear as you may think there's nothing dealing with the company, because I understood the company's action to be motivated as much as anything by the fact that when they got the self-report of the OWI, they discovered that in 2010 there had been another one that hadn't been reported. And so that is an honesty issue. It's an issue that, you know, companies are legitimately concerned about, for sure. But it's not, was he off there in the wilds of Wisconsin driving around irresponsibly? It's, you know, is he a forthcoming kind of person?
Correct, and it had nothing whatsoever to do with discipline.
Oh, it does have everything to do with discipline. Do you let other employees lie?
If they lie, their access may be denied. And if they lie outside
clips.
Of work, if their access may be denied.
What if they steal the paper clips from the desk drawer?
And they're at work?
Yeah.
Then I suppose they could be subject to discipline
for taking something
that didn't belong to them.
Exactly.
But the access decision.
Suppose the employer or a manager goes up to somebody while he's at the premises and said, have you in the past been convicted of drunk driving? And he lies. That could be a ground for a disciplinary discharge, for lying to a supervisor, or it could be a ground for access denial. But back to my question again, if your position seems to be that if the employer chooses access denial, then it's not reviewable, and if it says it's a disciplinary discharge, then it is. Now, it may be you're right. You have that complete, unfettered, unreviewable choice, but you're not owning up to the implications of your argument.
No, I apologize if you think that I'm not, because I'm trying to answer it. There are two questions in that hypothetical. For an arbitrator, one of them is for an arbitrator.
It would not go to an arbitrator on your contention if the employer said this is an access denial.
If it occurred under the circumstances of your hypothetical, where there was a disciplinary act allegedly that occurred at work, and it also rose the question of this individual's trustworthiness and reliability, which a separate group assesses, then there would be two issues, one of which the arbitrator under this contract cannot address, because the parties, and particularly in light of their bargaining history, removed language in 2009 that set any standard for which an arbitrator could judge access decisions.
Okay, we're familiar with that argument, and your time is up. So unless there are further questions,
thank you
very much. And did you run out of time? I think you did. I'll give you 1 minute.
Thank you. I guess I just want to finish up by saying Mr. Miosi's statements and admission that under certain circumstances, the same conduct could, in a different industry, subject with this contract language, allow the union to arbitrate the grievance. But because the company has the right, in their opinion, to make access decisions and those decisions are unreviewable, it's not. And by taking that position and by the lower court's decision in this case, the union has been deprived of what it bargained for. And that's just cause, a just cause provision that has to be met before an employee can be terminated and the right to arbitrate the issue of just cause.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks
to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.